Welcome to our show, Examine Life, on KKRN at 88.5 FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain.
I'm Steve.
I'm Pat.
And tonight we're going to be talking about, oh my goodness, no, religion.
Well, not exactly about religion, not as to what kind you are or what kind I am, but just religion in general.
Well, I find the whole subject fascinating, and I know there's a lot of taboos about talking about religion or politics.
Well, I think if you talk intelligently and broad-based to religion and you're not trying to convert someone, I think it's a topic for easy discussion.
And we haven't really decided on our format for the show tonight about how we want to approach religion, but we both think it's an important subject because I challenge anyone to describe any activity that we do that is not about feeding our mind or our senses or sheltering our mind or our senses except for religion.
And it's one thing that pulls a lot of people together in a family, in a community, in a temple or whatever your place of worship is. And it unites those people and gives them common ground and purpose.
What I do find interesting is that religions seem to fit the people. There are an enormous number of religions. I do have a list here of, I suppose, the most populated religions, and I'm going to go over those briefly in a minute. But it just shows you that all of these religions have something to offer, but there are quite a few of them. And any person who tells you or tells me that their religion is the only one that's true, I can point to this list and say, well, you know, there's probably more people than the ones in your religion that are saying differently. So how do you justify that statement?
And I happen to be looking up religion on the internet, and one of the strange things that I came across was they're defined by outwardly focused religions, such as Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Mormons, and inward focused religions like Buddhism, Hindu. And I thought that was interesting how it could be defined so readily.
Well, I think that's just a definition from the perspective of the person who did the defining, because if you look at within a particular religion, for instance, Christianity, I became good friends with a monk in our local area of a Christian monastery, and they focus very much inwardly. And it's because of the nature of their particular meditative practices. They actually go to the Eastern religions for tools to practice their meditation, but it's a Christian meditation, not an Eastern Hindu or anything like that. So they focus very much inwardly on their own souls and their own egos in their path.
Well, meditation, I think, is not necessarily religious. It was a part of philosophy at one point in time where people were taught to meditate, and now many people do it as a relaxation technique. It has nothing to do with religion.
Well, that's not what I was saying. I agree with you. Meditation is just a mental practice. But let me go quickly over some of these religions just to give people an idea of the religions of the world and who is in them. Christianity has 2.1 billion adherents, Islam 1.6 billion, and the secular / non-religious / agnostic / atheist take up 1.1 billion. Hinduism 1 billion, Chinese traditional religion 394, that's such as Shinto. Shinto is the Japanese version, but it's kind of a conglomeration of different religious viewpoints. Then Buddhism is only 367 million. Ethnic religions, including some in separate categories, 300 million. African tradition religions, 100 million. Sikhism, 23 million. Uke, 19 million. That's another offshoot religion. Spiritism, which is an interesting little one, 15 million. And then Judaism at 14 million. Baha'i, which is part of the an offshoot of one of the Muslim religions. Jainism at 4.2 million, Shinto, which is a Japanese cultural religion, Kaodai, which is an offshoot of Buddhism from Vietnam, Zoroastrianism, which is started in Iran, actually, and Tenrico, which I forget currently, 2 million, Neo-Paganism, 1 million, Unitarian Universalism, 800,000, and Rastafarianism. 600,000. I hope that didn't put everybody to sleep.
Well, it also goes to show what the definition, the noun of religion is a relation of humans to a god or what they consider sacred. And every one of those religions has something that is they consider sacred.
Now, it's interesting. You and I have had a discussion before about how you don't consider Buddhism, for instance, to be a religion because it doesn't have a personified god. And yet this list, and this comes from Wikipedia, which means it has a lot of contributors, says that it is a religion. And I'm listening to a book by the Dalai Lama right now, which also says it's a religion. It just says that it doesn't have a god, which is a person.
Well, I think as religion, personally, that it's a faith or belief in something or someone higher or bigger than thyself. Meaning I have to answer to somebody, I guess. And the inward-looking religions have a tendency to focus on the inside of us and not something bigger or greater than us on the outside.
Well, actually, and I've had this discussion also, which takes us into quantum physics and some other things, but if you focus inward, there that doesn't mean that you're not focusing outward. It means that some people believe that the truly infinite is inward. And so you are focusing on something higher than yourself because you see the world in three dimensions does not mean that infinity is not inside of you.
That's true. And I know Buddhism has often been referred to as the teachings of the true nature of reality, which may or may not be religious, but it may be something that you hold in a sacred capacity within you.
For instance, myself as a Buddhist, what I believe is that there is a God, and that we simply argue about definitions. So that, to me, a truly infinite God, if it's truly infinite, which most religions say that their God is, that means that it cannot be separate from me. Because if it's separate from me, that means that it's outside of me, so my little part of the universe then is not included in it, so it's not infinite. So, but it's not a person, place, or thing, and so therefore some people would say that's not a God. And I say it's just a matter of your definition of what a God is. If you can tell me for sure what a God is, then you can say this is not one. But if you can't do that, then you can't say what is not a God.
I was raised in the environment of you went to church, you carried your beliefs inside of you, but that worship was a basic element of religion, and you did that in a place, a temple, a church, a synagogue, whatever. And that was also wrapped up with moral conduct and beliefs in right and wrong, the Ten Commandments, all of these things were elements of religion. And when you look at some things like Buddhism, your religion, you don't find those things. So it's hard for me to see that as a religion. It's more of a philosophy. This is the way I go through life that is purposeful to me rather than something on the outside of me.
Which of those things don't you find in Buddhism?
The idea, the element of I go to a place of worship. Buddhism doesn't need a place of worship. It's an inward meditative type of, even those that go are not in what I have seen. Okay, the Catholic Church, say, for instance, it's very ceremonial. There's a participation. There's give and take with a priest. Where Buddhism, it seems to be a quiet inner type of worship where you
need to watch some of the activities in the Buddhist temples.
Apparently.
And you need to talk to some of the Christians who don't go to church and say that they have a one-to-one relationship with God.
This is true. And there are all degrees of religious belief. There is the fanatic and there is the casual, I believe in God, but I don't go to church. That's true in every religion.
Right. So then if they don't go to church, they're still in a religion. They
true.
Believe in Christ. So,
right.
So that therefore Buddhism is in the same category. Some go to church, some go to monasteries, some go to worship services, some strictly meditate and live their life. And when you talk about a set of morals and a type of action to perform, Buddhism has what's called the Eightfold Path, and it's the center of their religion about how to act every day. And I'm terrible at memorizing lists, and so I can't give you the Eightfold Path, the eight pieces of it today, but but they definitely have a moral, a way that you act. I think one of the differences is in Christianity, for instance, coveting would be a sin. In other words, you could be punished for that from an outside agency such as God. In Buddhism, covetousness is simply means that you have not yet learned to become unattached to that thing that you covet. And so it's not a sin. You're just going to have to suffer all the more longer because you haven't learned to not be attached to it. So a Buddhist does not say you can't have riches, as the Bible does. A Buddhist says if you're attached to those riches, you're going to suffer. If you're not attached to them, you won't suffer.
The common ground there is suffering. All religions have a common ground of somehow the lack of conduct or misconduct leads to suffering of some sort or another.
And that's another thing that Buddhism says. That's the Eightfold Path is the center of Buddhism as far as actions. The suffering is the center of the message of Buddhism. And the whole message of Buddhism is about the idea that all of your suffering comes because you want something that you can't have, including if you have pain and you want freedom from pain and you have the pain, you suffer. If you learn to accept the pain, you don't suffer.
Okay. Going back to many other religions, there are things like the Quran, the Torah, the Bible. And again, going back to Buddhism, you don't have this tangible, let's say, book, okay, or guidance pamphlet, say.
I hate to be so argumentative today, but I do love to argue.
and I'm just testing
what
you.
You certainly are. What I have to tell you is that an interesting dichotomy in Buddhism, which is actually a negative, and that is that many, many of the history texts about Buddhism say that the Buddha's primary statement not long before he died was, don't believe anything they write down that I said, only go by meditation. And yet Buddhism is the most written about religion on the planet. It has more writings than Christianity, Islam, any others.
And I've read a number of books on Buddhism, and I'm always come back to the idea that it seems to swirl around the idea of philosophy. So, but getting back to religions, I'd like to talk about, maybe after a break, we'll come back and talk about things like atheism, cults, the fundamentalist, all of these things.
KKRN is community-supported radio. The benefit of community-supported radio is that the listeners can influence the content. So please contribute what you can and let us know what you think. You are listening to KKRN Radio, 88.5 FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain. KKRN is community-supported radio. If you enjoy poetry, Pamela Spoto will entertain and stimulate you with poetry, poetry discussion, and conversation. Her show, Late Night Poetry Jam, airs some Saturday nights between 10 and 11 p.m., only on KKRN listener-supported radio.
Oh, jeebus, creepers, where'd you get those beavers? Jeebus, creepers, where'd you get those eyes? Oh, gosh, I'll get 'em. How'd you get so lit up? Gosh, I'll get 'em. How'd you get that size? Oh, golly gee, when you turn the heaters on, woe is me. Got to put my cheetahs on. A jeebus creepers, where'd you get those peepers? Oh, those weepers, had to get my ties. Oh.
Well, we're back. This is Examine Life on KKRN 88.5 on your FM dial in Bella Vista at Round Mountain. I'm Steve.
I'm Pat, and you're listening to Examine Life. And this evening we're talking about religion in a generic sort of way. And religion is defined as an organized system of beliefs, ceremonies, and rules to worship, or an interest or a belief in an activity that is very important to a person or a group of people, a cause, principle, or system of beliefs held to with ardor and faith, and a scrupulous conformity and commitment of devotion.
That's a pretty wide, broadband description. Even an activity that you like to...
An activity that is very important to a person or a group. They consider football is a religion to some people. Family is a religion to some people. It doesn't have to be a structured religion belief in a deity.
Some interesting things about religion. Religions tend to follow cultures. I noticed that in the religions that had polytheism, such as the Romans who had their gods and the Greeks that had theirs, both of those civilizations had multiple gods that were constantly having intrigues to try to gain power over one another. And guess what? Both of those societies had very complicated politics.
And politics is, in the United States here, we separate church and state. But historically, and in many, many countries, that is not true. And that's why there's a lot of disrest and wars throughout the world, is because of that. You think back to the Crusades, and I know there's a lot of misunderstanding about the Crusades, but in 1095, it was the Byzantine emperor asked the Christians to protect his empire from the Turks against Muslims because of their incursion into the Christian lands, and they were afraid that if Constantinople fell, which was the center of the Byzantine Roman empires, even the Ottomans, they were based out of Constantinople. And that was the whole purpose of the Crusades, was to push back the Muslims from taking over Christian lands. And a lot of people felt that this emperor was asking for the Christians to fight for him politically because he wanted to stay in power. If the Muslims should take over the Christian lands, he would get thrown out of power. Plus the financial benefit that the Muslims were controlling all of the seaports, so there wasn't any trade to the east any longer, which was financially catastrophic to those empires, those Christian empires.
Well, and actually the cause for the differences between the two religions, Judaism and Islam, has biblical roots going back to two of the kings of Israel, and two brothers. And when they split, that's apparently where the Judaism separated from Islam originally. And then, of course, after that, it all became cultural, and they had wars because each had countries. And they're still doing that today in the Middle East. It's exactly the same thing.
And interestingly, the Quran and the Bible, which represent the two extremes, are both books that were written by the priests or those deities that were in power and controlled the religion, because people were illiterate. They couldn't read or write. So they could uphold this book or Quran or whatever Torah, whatever it was that they wanted the people to adhere to, they could hold that up as a sacred. They were the only ones that could interpret what it said, and thus they controlled their population, which it may be considered political.
It's very political because people bring politics into everything. That was kind of going to be my gist tonight about religion. It's religion's about cultures and nations and people's personalities. In my mind, I think there are many, many adherents to religions who are truly trying to find their God. But I think most people approach it from a political standpoint. People die for religions. And every single religion, no matter how nice it seems to be today, has an evil past somewhere.
Well, I think none of us have been alive long enough to go back, 2,000 years or further before Christ, and there are a lot of history before Christ that came along. There's even been, when the Christians started with their replacement theology, where the Christian church replaced Israel, that the Christian church would supersede Israel in God's plan. And all of these things, they spiritualized. Even circumcision was no longer part of the Christian religion as dictated as a literal physical thing. It was considered part of the heart, the spiritualism. So a lot of the history of religions are a difference of opinion that may not have been based in politics.
Well, I guess at that point we'd have to define what's politics.
Yeah, office even has politics.
I think we get into another mire there. I just know the religion seem to, people seem to follow the religion that fits their personality. And so you can't really, there's no religion that has the ultimate truth. It's possible that all the religions together have the ultimate truth, that each one has a piece of it. But people tend to follow the religions. I notice some people really become involved in their religion, and they try to live their religion. They try to give to people. They try to be kind, or they go to jihad and try to murder people, whatever they do. But many people, if you just observe their actions, they go to church, they do the ablutions, they do what they need to do, and then they're done with religion till the following Sunday. It's like they take that religion because it's convenient and easy, and they can feel like they've done the right thing, but they don't really have to do it.
And a lot of us are born into a specific religion. Your parents may be active in the church, and you're born and you're baptized, which is also another item of, let's say, argument amongst the religions. Some believe in baptism, some do not. Some believe in it at birth, others believe in it at a certain age. But your family indoctrinated you into a specific religion. And most people don't ever shop religions, you might say, where they go and either study theology or they go to different types of churches. And a lot of problems are based in the fear of religion. I'm afraid of you because your religion is unknown to me and it's threatening. You dress strange. Something like that that is irrelevant.
Well, there's, again, it's very personal. Religion is very personal with people. I'm surprised when I hear about people killing other people simply because they don't believe the same thing that they believe, something that has no effect on their daily life. Now, in some cases, if the religion's embedded in the culture, it does have an effect on their daily life. But in many cases, it's not. Jihad, as it's being used today, is to kill people simply because they don't believe in your way of life. And they're not in your country. They don't need to, they don't affect your way of life, and yet because they don't believe, they need to be killed. And it's just very personal.
And a lot of religions don't believe that your conduct gets you into heaven or in God's good graces or whoever your spiritual leader might be it Muhammad or whomever, that your conduct on earth doesn't necessarily get you where you think you're going to be after death, if in fact there is such a place, which is also another argument.
It's true. There are some religions that you have to go through certain verbal rituals in order to get into heaven, and you can do all of the wonderful works that you want and help all the people you can, but if you don't do those specific verbal actions, you won't get into heaven.
Exactly. And some people don't believe that there is such a thing as heaven. That's another discussion. But how many religions don't believe in life after death, where there's not necessarily a reincarnation, but that your spirit goes somewhere? I think most religions believe the body dies, but it's the discussion of spirit. Is that literal? Is that something that does go on after death?
Well, see, it depends on the religion. With the ones that believe in reincarnation, such as Buddhism or Hinduism, it's not that the spirit goes to heaven at some point. With those religions, heaven is not a place. A person is living in illusion in this body, and when the meditation takes them to a point of enlightenment where they no longer have this illusion, then they realize, essentially, this isn't the way they put it, but they realize they've been in heaven all along. They just didn't see it. So they don't go to a place in those religions. It's a state of mind.
Exactly. And there have been a number of movies out this past year about that very fact of life after death or the challenges. And interestingly, in one of the movies, the father goes and talks to a professor who is, let's say, atheist. She brings him back to the reality of the science of what we perceive as death. And it was a kind of a glitch in the movie, maybe.
I'm not sure I understand that. But I do know that when an atheist, for instance, claims with certainty that there is no God, I'm not overly needful that everybody have a religion, but I take exception to that statement because the atheist has no scientific basis for making a declaration. They can say they don't believe there's one, but I've heard many on television say there is not one, and you can't make that statement. You have to have proof to make a statement like that.
And most of us that have religion have faith in there being a God and there being something, but we can't prove that it is no more than they can prove that there isn't.
And I think that's where the one-to-one relationship comes from, is that you essentially have to, again, in some of the contemplative religions, you have to realize it internally. You can't describe it to someone else, which is why the Buddha said, they're going to write down things that I said, don't believe them. You have to meditate until you become enlightened and you experience it for yourself, because language and senses cannot see it.
What was that number you said made up the atheist and the agnostics of the world? It was huge.
It was about a billion. I think it was one of the larger numbers. But again, it was a whole group of people. And it included agnostics. And some of those, if you read the definitions of those aren't necessarily people that aren't religious.
And we also have a society, I don't know if it happens so much in other countries as we have here, what you might call cults, which is a blooming ego person who comes out on the stage, gets a lot of followers, and then vanishes somehow. We've even had some religions, structured religions, called cults, maybe because they speak in tongues or they have another practice that is not acceptable to the normal way of life. And we label them cults.
I think you hit on something there. I think Jesus and his followers would have been called a cult at the time because their beliefs were so radical. Speaking of which, I personally think that the Old Testament and the New Testament of the Bible should be two different Bibles. I think the only thing missing from the New Testament is the creation story. And I don't think you have to have one of those. But the cultures of the two parts of the Bible are so different, I don't see them as the same religion.
Well, cult is kind of a label we put on things. And I know the Mormon Church has been stuck with that label on occasion. I've heard it on the news referred to. And a lot of them say the LDS Church, Latter-day Saints, don't believe, they're not Christians. I have relatives in my family that are Mormon, and they are Christians, but they believe that Jesus is now God and that there is not going to be a second coming of Jesus, that all we have now is God. And so they're not non-Christians. They just believe in Christianity a little bit differently.
Well, I think it's the same emotion that drives racism and other things like it. It's a person doesn't understand them or doesn't believe. And I think some people just have to denigrate other people. I really don't think there's anything more to it than that. The Mormons that I've met, I have one of my best friends growing up is a very devout Mormon. He's always tried to follow the rules. And, you know, and then I've met people who say that they're Mormon and they're not really. They just want to have the label. It's a very personal thing. But the religion, there's nothing wrong with that religion. It's, as you said, they have their own interpretation. My biggest thing that I'm against with religion is, you talked earlier about people being raised in a religion. I just don't think you should indoctrinate a child. I don't think you can truly say you believe something unless you discover your belief in it as an adult.
Well, I think a lot of adults have a way of feeling this way personally when you have children and you want them to be educated. And you start looking at a religious church and then a religious school because you want your kids taught more about right and wrong, maybe, versus socializing. A lot of our schools now seem to be centered around socializing rather than on education. And a lot of the religious schools have a little more bent towards facts and figures and knowledge and a little less on social activity and sports events.
Well, that's what I did with my kids. They went to a Catholic school and got a very good education.
And was a Buddhist?
Yeah. And I went to the church sometimes. There are certain activities I didn't do in the church because I didn't feel ethical doing those. I felt it was being unfair to the church itself. But I went to the church. I held the hands and I sang with people. And my kids got a great education. And they got they had very loving treatment by the nuns there and the teachers. Well, there were only one or two nuns, but the bottom line is, you know, you can do that for the right reasons. What I have a problem with is indoctrinating a child. I'm having a discussion now with not a relative, but someone close, who is a member of a particular Christian religion, about trying to indoctrinate a child with what they believe. I just don't think that's right. I think you have a one-on-one relationship, and that doesn't mean that someone else trains you from childhood to believe that way, because I don't think it's real when that happens.
The unity of the family becomes critical under religion, and it might be a time for us to take a quick break.
Give me a kiss to build a dream on. And my imagination will thrive upon that kiss. Sweetheart, I ask no more than this. A kiss to build a dream on. Give me a kiss before you leave me. And my imagination will feed my hungry heart. Leave me one thing before we part. A kiss to build a dream on.
Join the discussion. KKRN boasts a variety of talk radio, both from local and syndicated sources. We want to stimulate thoughtful and meaningful conversation. KKRN can offer more real conversation because we are supported by listeners. You have a voice.
Making believe they're true. Oh, give me your lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live.
The infinite possibilities of music are showcased by the eclectic panorama of song styles that you can find on KKRN Radio. You won't find our musical explorations on more mainstream commercially driven stations. From classic country to new age, from classic folk to classic rock, from blues to jazz, and music from outside our country. You'll find it all on KKRN listener-supported radio, radio that makes you listen.
I'll be with you. dreaming romances, making believe they're true. Oh, give me lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live. Oh, give me what you alone can give. I'll kiss the pillow dreamer.
Hi, we're back. I'm Pat.
I'm Steve.
This is Examine Life.
And now, Pat would like to talk a little bit
about women in religion. A lot of women have to take a back seat in religion, and it's been that way for centuries. This isn't anything new. But there have been women prominent in religions. Most recently, in the 1920s, Amy McPherson established a church in Los Angeles. And it was the first mega church. It was the Angelus Temple. It was she was a Protestant, and this was her answer to the Pentecostal church. She was a revivalist. She was the first woman to preach the sermon on the radio. But women in religion go back much further than that.
Is that a bit of a play on words?
What's that?
The sermon on the radio versus the Sermon on the Mount?
Maybe. Who knows? A sermon's a sermon. But there's many, many books have been written about religion. And recently I read a book called When God Was a Woman. It was very fascinating. It was not about a religion like we think of it, but how archaeologists have dug up evidence that at a point in time, women were considered, the goddesses were considered the gods that ran everything.
In certain parts of the world, that's true. And there were actually a couple of iconic ones that stick out, I think because they have the most information about them. And reading the histories, it seems to me that what transpired was that there were agriculture was discovered or enhanced. And I believe that was probably mostly the work of women. I mean, when you look at a lot of the pastoral societies, the men go hunt, the women pick berries or they grow crops. And I think women are just better at that. Women, you know, kind of instinctively need to have a home and a place.
The nesting instinct.
The nesting instinct. And so with the agriculture came the power. It wasn't just that women were considered goddesses or the goddesses were women, but it appears from that book that you're talking about and other historical references I've seen recently that women also were in charge of government and the inheritances passed through women.
And this was particularly like 2700 BC. This is where Crete, Greece, Egypt had women societies. In fact, Asia Minor is where we came up with that Amazons referred to Amazon women. That's how they thought of them historically. And even the writings on the archaeology has been slightly tainted with women being Amazons, even though the roles were just slightly reversed and women could own and inherit property rather than everything being controlled by men.
And there were some of those, most of those societies, as I read, they had that aspect that women were more powerful, but in fact, they weren't generally warlike societies.
No, even though there were warrior women, it was not based on war. It was most of the time, they were, geography played a part in isolating these cultures so that women could thrive without a lot of invasion from other male-dominated religions, which ultimately is what happened to them.
And what the book tends to indicate is, in some cases, the Indo-European religions that were patriarchal came in and just devastated the culture that had the goddess religion. But in other cases, they slowly moved in and insinuated themselves. They were still subservient to the women. But then they gradually, it seems, converted the culture into more and more becoming male-dominated. So in some cases, it happened gradually. In others, it was an attack.
Yes. And ironically, one of the few goddesses that survive in modern day is Pele, the god of fire in Hawaii, which they believe is where volcanoes come from.
Well, and, you know, when you think about men and women thousands of years ago, when there wasn't a lot of science and it was just reaction to the environment, and the power that women sexually, biochemically held over men, even psychologically. And for men to worship women was kind of a natural thing. I mean, they were such mysterious creatures, and they had physiological things that just seemed miraculous, and they could create life. And they were probably, without them, agriculture would not have developed to the degree that it did. So it was natural for women to be in charge and to be the goddess.
And it was that very fact that they had this power of giving birth to new life that may have intimidated the male civilization to the fear, want to control. Fear makes us want to lash out at that which you're afraid of. And that may be a reason that those civilizations were turned to be male-dominated.
And that could be part of it. Some of them, the Indo-Europeans, came from the Middle East. And of course, the environment. Environment's a big factor in how cultures develop. And there was, you know, there was harsh lands, a lot of desert, difficult living, which can create cultural differences like that as well. The cultures that I read about that had the goddess religions seemed to be in places more friendly to agriculture and just a generally more beneficent culture.
Even the ancient Christians and the ancient Muslims, they were much kinder to women than they are today. Isis, ironically, was a goddess many thousands of years ago. And there are three temples to the goddess of Isis in Rome. And she was the predecessor before Christianity that led the way to have a worship of the Virgin Mary idea.
Right, right. Yeah, the structure of that relationship was the same. And it boils down to what I had said before, that religions reflect the culture and the people rather than being some fundamental truth about nature or the universe.
And it's only been in recent history, and I mean recent meaning the last few hundred years, that religions thrive geographically because they were isolated or they were on an island or they were a part of the world that didn't have this preponderance of visitors and outside influence that we have today.
Right. And so they were allowed to flourish when, if that hadn't been the case, because of the violence of some of the Indo-Europeans and others that came and destroyed the religion, it might have happened much earlier, and it may not have been able to develop as much as it did. And I think some of those patriarchal ones that took them over would not have developed that agriculture on their own, because, again, I think women were probably mostly responsible for how that went.
And that's very true. The archaeologists are finding more and more evidence that women and how they got a lot of power was because not only agriculture, but that they could inherit land. And so they could make the land beneficial and be productive. And that's how they got financial gain, and they could inherit money and property, which was taken away from them for another thousands of years until just recent times when here in the United States, women have the same rights as men.
I do want to say real quickly, though, before we go too far in our angelic picture of women, that in these earlier religions, I know of at least one that I read about where the woman had a male consort for 1 year, and then he was sacrificed.
Yes, he would be beheaded or sacrificed at the altar. But think of the thousands of years that virgins were sacrificed.
Oh,
it's different.
No, I'm not. I'm not saying that men were any better. What I'm saying is that people are people.
Yes, and it can also be the evolution of society that brings that all about. And it's for reasons we don't know, we didn't live at that time, that there were human sacrifices in any pagan religion.
Right. They interpreted nature. They created these gods of the sun and of the moon and of the water. And you know, they had to impute the characteristics of these gods by their experiences in their own minds. So you can't really say what was in their minds that caused them to have that particular ritual. It was what fit with the people and the culture at the time.
And for all the archaeology that they can dig up artifacts and pieces of things, They cannot dig up what was in the minds of people, even if they read hieroglyphics. There, for thousands of years, there was not a written word that was language common to all. And so our interpretation, look at how many interpretations there are of the Bible, and that's not that old of a book.
No, and there's, yeah, there are so many interpretations. Same thing with Buddhism. As I said before, Buddhists are not supposed to write down what the Buddha said, and yet it has the most writings of any of the religions of the world, which just goes to show you that even if people believe in a particular religion, they ignore what it tells them and do what they want.
And how common is that today?
It's humanity.
Yes.
I do want to say, too, when we were defining religions earlier, remember that atheism, think of the word atheism. Atheism does not mean that a person is not religious. Atheism simply means they don't believe there is a God. And we've established with our discussion that a religion does not have to include a God.
No, there were many religions that did not have a deity that was a person. It could, many civilizations worship the sun or other things that were not necessarily a non-tangible being.
And there are some current religions today that believe that there's just this all-inclusive something that is God that isn't really a person. I'd have to look at some of my definitions, but there are some religions that still exist that that's their deity. It's an impersonal everything.
And for as detrimental as the radicals are that are fundamentalists in their religion that are causing a lot of havoc and have brought a lot of war to the world, religion also brings out the kinder side to people. It tempers a little bit of that anger, frustration, and violent nature that man has against man.
It gives you a higher meaning. If you ask a person, why should I bother to be kind to the next person if there is no higher existence to think about? And there is no answer to that. The only answer that can be given is, well, because you want the human race to continue on. Well, the question is, why? If there's no heaven, no God, no higher existence, why does it matter what we do? I think religion is a fundamental basis for that. That's in the Constitution of the United States, where the Founding Fathers did the Judeo-Christian philosophy, was because that's where they believe the rights came from. So it forms a basis for why we do what we do. And I challenge anyone to tell me, why bother being good to your fellow man? You can't say, well, it's just right. What makes it right?
Well, I think goodness comes from within. There are evil people out there, as much as we'd like to think there isn't. There are. There are evil people, and maybe the temperance of those that are good and beneficial and try and save those souls, and I'm not talking about saving them spiritually. I'm talking about saving them from doing harm to others.
But why? What's the point? I mean, to the person who wants to do evil, why should they bother?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
If there's no religion, there's no reason not to.
Right. And most evil souls have no religion. And so it's those of the rest of society that have religion that try not convert them to their religion so much as the see the light concept. And we all heard that term of he got religion when he went to prison, or when the governor wanted to do something at a certain point in time, or they got religion about that subject. People used to refer to that as Abe Lincoln. He got religion about slavery. But, and it's meaning seeing the light. It doesn't necessarily mean believing in God.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people in the Middle East right now doing horrible things that say they're doing it for religion.
Yes. And those are, in my opinion, what we consider extremists.
Right, but is it really a religion or not?
I don't know that in their mind it is, but in the broader concept of religion, maybe it's out there outside of what we rest of us consider religion.
So it really is all relative.
That's right. It's all relative to your thinking and to what religion is to you and what matters to you, what's important to you.
Religion's a fascinating subject. It's, again, the one endeavor that is not about our physical existence. And there's no other activity that humans do except religion that is not about our physical existence.
And it's all from the inside out. If you worship inwardly or outwardly, it all comes from your own inside you, what you believe, yourself, in your mind.
And there are some that believe that the great infinite is inside of you, not outside of you.
Correct. That's absolutely right.
This has been a great show.
This has been Examine Life. I'm Pat.
I'm Steve.
And thank you for being with us on KKRN.
We hope you enjoy our show. You can reach us by email at examinelife@kkrn.org. And we really would like to have your input and to know what you would like to hear and what we've said that you didn't like and did like. And we hope you'll email us with that. We'll be with you on our next program.
Good night.
Plato said that the unexamined life is not worth living. He meant that we should try to understand ourselves and our actions. That understanding enriches the meaning and relevance of our lives. Each week on Examine Life, Pat and I will discuss some aspect of human existence, human endeavors, political endeavors, all from a perspective of human nature.
Up the rice in the church where a wedding has been. Lives in a dream, waits at the window, wearing the face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for? All the lonely people.
KKRN is community supported radio. The benefit of community supported radio is that the listeners can influence the content. So please contribute what you can and let us know what you think. You are listening to KKRN Radio, 88.5 FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain. KKRN is community-supported radio.
When there's nobody there, what does he care? All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong?
Join the discussion. KKRN boasts a variety of talk radio, both from local and syndicated sources. We want to stimulate thoughtful and meaningful conversation. KKRN can offer more real conversation because we are supported by listeners. You have a voice. But if you don't help support the station, your voice is muted. Please make a contribution today.
Yeah.